Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Callum Stoneman. Tech Talk, of course, our weekly chance to get together and have a look at what's going on in the world of technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective. If you want to get in contact with us, please do. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Emails or voice messages are always welcome. Coming up this week, we'll be hearing about the Ally Assistant available on the Envision smart glasses. Plus, we'll be speaking to the developers of Land of Livia, an idle adventure game for iOS devices. Joining me this week are the usual crew, Hubert Pavalkovic, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran. Natalie, welcome to you first. What's going on with you this week?
Hi, Callum. Well, in some ways I feel like I'm very late to the party on this one, and in other ways I feel like there's a good explanation for that. And that is Spotify. And when I say Spotify, I mean the desktop app. Because it occurred to me this week, I had a bit of time on my hands at work, and I thought, hang on a minute, I do quite like listening to music. I often take one earphone out on my laptop and plug one earphone into my phone, so I've got music running one ear and JAWS running the other. And I thought, wait a minute, JAWS can now do the earphone splitting thing, which I've used many times before, so for anybody who's not familiar with this, there's an option with JAWS where you do, let me get this right, JAWS key plus space, then it's V for volume, and you press either the left or the right arrow to direct JAWS to your left or right headphone. And it used to be that it only worked on special headphones, but with JAWS 24, it works on any. And I often use this for meetings or calls or that kind of thing where I'm having to juggle maybe doing a presentation or checking my notes and alongside a meeting. But it hadn't occurred to me to try it with music. And the other half of this is to hear the last time I tried the Spotify app, which admittedly was about 15 years ago, it was so inaccessible. I think the only thing that actually announced itself on the screen was a search field, and you just had to hope for the best after that. So I downloaded the Spotify app, and it works really well. I mean, it's not perfect, because these things rarely are. But yeah, I managed to search for what I wanted, pick a playlist, hit play, have it routed between the two headphones. The volume balanced really nicely, but even when I found the music a bit too loud, to my astonishment, the volume slider in Spotify app itself also worked, was also accessible. So I could lower the music volume and leave JAWS at the same volume without having to do any, you know, fancy skullduggery in the sound settings. So it was a very pleasant experience.
Yeah, nice. I must admit, if that's accessible now, because I used to use Spotify probably about the same, yeah, probably a good few years ago. And yeah, the desktop app on Windows and Mac was, yeah, not great.
Yeah, I think you'll be very polite there.
To put it politely. Do you know what? I'm actually a bit jealous of that, because I do the same. I like having having music while I'm working, but I've not really found a good way of doing it. I don't think work would let us download the Spotify app, which is annoying. I use Apple Music now rather than Spotify, and it's great. It ties in pretty well with Siri and the Apple Watch. You can use that to control your volume and all that kind of stuff. But the problem is, you can get that on the desktop, but the only way of getting that on Windows is to download iTunes. Anyone remember iTunes?
iTunes? Who? You can get Apple Music on the web, which I love using on my work machine, because you could just tap into...
Can you?
Yeah, you can tap into the website. Basically log in with your Apple ID, get through the 3,000 security checks. Well, not 3,000, but you know, two. You can then pick playlists. You can.
It is a bit laggy, though. Do you not find that, Hubert?
No.
I've tried it, and I've found it a little bit kind of, when you're looking for music, you know, if you're searching for music, I found it a little bit laggy.
What I tend to do is just pick a playlist and just shuffle. I don't really search much. For me, I just pick a playlist I like, and then press shuffle and use the beautiful feature that I love, that I wish Mac at some point got, is the, what I love on Windows is the volume mixer. It's one of my favorite settings because I don't need to then split the headphone volume. What I do is just turn down the volume of the browser that I'm using and kind of have the music playing quietly in the background, but quietly enough that, loud enough so I can hear it, but quietly enough that it doesn't interrupt the screen reader. And I love it. I always listen to something when I work. I don't like silence, so to me, that's always essential.
I didn't know you could get that on the web.
That's quite interesting, Hubert, because I think the volume mixer and things can be quite faffy to get to sometimes. Or if you want to remember to turn it off again, if you're then watching, like, I don't know, a YouTube video or a tutorial or something at work, you need to remember to turn the volume back up. So I think that's why I lean towards the headphone side of things. Also, I think just on a cognitive level, I can almost tune my brain to be like, okay, left ear is working, right ear is having a party.
I like that way of putting it, to be fair. I'll take that.
I didn't know you could get it on the web, though. That's I'm more excited about that than I should be, actually. I'm going to try that after this.
You can.
Hubert, anything caught your attention this week?
So I was having a chat with a few people in the education sector who asked me about, you know, what my thoughts on Narrator are. And I said, yeah, it's doing a good job at trying to keep up with other screen readers. I don't think it's a bad screen reader at all. And I think there's many times where Narrator is very much a good screen reader. What I've seen recently has added to it because Narrator is introducing the same thing as many other screen readers have now, AI-generated image descriptions, which will be coming into various PCs. At the moment, only available on the Copilot Plus PCs. It will be coming to Intel PCs very soon as well. So that's quite an interesting one. There's a key command which is Control Narrator Key and the letter D, I believe. But yeah, you can get AI-generated descriptions on using Narrator soon on your Windows PC.
It's underrated, Narrator, I think, to be fair, and
I think it's often overlooked.
well, it is. I mean, since Windows 10, it's become brilliant, and I think it can get. I don't know if you can get these on Windows 10 or if it's just 11, but those natural voices that you can get.
I believe they're only available on Windows 11. I remember when I discovered them and I discovered one of the voices and I sped it up to 100 miles an hour, which I always like doing. And it still maintained its natural sound, which to me is great because many voices, especially screen reader voices, at faster rates often start sounding very, well, not very good, quite frankly, to be put honest. And when you sped them up, they maintained their natural sound throughout, which is what is essential, I think.
I just wish they'd make that available system-wide, so you could have that on any screen reader.
That's what I would like too, because I don't mind using Eloquence, I'm used to it, but you know, it would be nice to have a more natural voice.
What I'd say, like with all of these, is whilst I'm a JAWS and VoiceOver user myself, is the fact that it's making screen readers themselves more accessible. You know, just because JAWS is extortionate. So I've got quite an old version of JAWS on my personal laptop, and I'm toying with the idea of upgrading it, but I don't use my laptop very often personally. So I'm like, is it worth it? And then I'm thinking, is it a chicken and egg situation? Do I not use it very often? So I've got an old version of JAWS. It can be a wee bit clunky at times. So should I upgrade it? I'm like, yeah, but then it's really expensive. Should I go for NVDA and try one of these other screen readers? Because they are getting better sort of by the day.
The problem with not upgrading JAWS is a catch 22, because if you don't upgrade it and then you decide you do want to, then you've got to pay even more money to update it. You know, if you're a few versions behind it, it can become a little bit expensive doing it that way. So what we tend to do is just pay, you know, for our SMAs, and just upgrade them, you know, at the time, because otherwise you could, you know, you could get quite a nasty surprise if you leave it for a few years and you think, oh, I need to do this, and then when you go to do it, you think, my God, you know, that is really expensive.
Well, in a way, speaking of expensive things, I've left Jackie till last because I think I know what you're going to talk about, and this is really cool.
really exciting for me anyway, as a Monarch user, is a program on the Monarch called Wing It. That's Wing space IT. You can download it from the App Store. It's only available apparently for iOS, but Wing It is amazing because if you pair it with your Monarch, there is the Monarch app, and then you get the other part of it, which is Wing It for iOS, and then you open the two up and they connect to each other via Bluetooth. So it's great. It's very easy. And then you can start using the canvas. There are lots of icons at the bottom of the screen on the iPhone that it works really well. And you double tap on the canvas, and then you could start drawing. And whatever you draw on your phone or iPad actually then comes out on the Monarch, surface. And I think it's amazing. It totally blows my mind, to be honest, that you can actually draw with your fingers. And I'm actually contemplating how well this would work with an Apple Pencil. If you really wanted to use a pencil or a stylus, that you could pair that with Bluetooth on your phone or iPad, and then actually hold that in your hand and just draw. Now, I was just making little squiggles and just lines, just to see what would happen on the Monarch. But it all comes out, and then of course you can expand that on the Monarch. You can zoom in and zoom out. It's just incredible, and I could see just the whole idea of a teacher doing that in class on the cuff, just opening the app and just giving it to a pupil. This is what say an isosceles triangle or a scalene triangle looks like, and you can just do it there without waiting for any tactile diagrams to be embossed at a later date. It's imminent, immediate, so it's really, really amazing. It just blew my mind.
It is so. I mean, look, I'm going to say, I always get a bit irritated when the Monarch comes up because I just think, yeah, that's amazing, but 15 grand, come on. But this is, if you are lucky enough to get this, especially in education, then the uses for this are endless, really, aren't they? Being able to just draw something and have it appear multi-line as pretty much as big as you want. It's really cool. All right, well, a very interesting. A lot of interesting stuff this week, as always. Thanks, guys. Stick with us. This is Tech Talk.
Now, some of you listening would have heard about the company Envision for quite a few years. The company behind the Envision glasses, the Envision app, and now the Ally Assistant app as well. Today, we will find out about all of that and more, as joining me now is the co-founder and CTO at Envision, Karthik Kannan. Karthik, many thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm super, super excited to be here. And I love coming back on the show because you guys always have the best questions.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you, and I look forward to finding out more about your various products because I've used a few of them. So it's always interesting to find out more information. But for those who maybe have not heard of Envision, can you give us a little bit of background about the company?
So Envision has been in the accessibility space for quite some time. There might be people who know us from the early days of the Envision AI app, which was an app that allowed blind or low vision people to take pictures of things around them and speak it out to them. And then we'd have the Envision glasses, which came out right after. And people might know us from there. It's still available today for people to buy all over the world. It's a pair of smart glasses that help a blind or low vision person to live more independently by reading text around them, recognizing faces, objects, and so on. But what we're really excited about and what we're here to talk about today is Ally. Ally is our latest product. It's basically taking all our experience and knowledge and feedback that we've had over the last 8 years of building Envision and built something completely new and exciting for the accessibility for blind and low vision community, right? Ally is a very intelligent, accessible conversational AI that you can talk to Ally can basically answer any question that you might have, ask it. It can look up the weather for you. It can, find the best rated coffee shop, near your house or in a new town. Might help you look up stuff on the internet. It can scan documents for you. You can simply say, "Hey, can you read this letter for me and tell me what the total? Tell me, give me a summary of what it says, or can you read this electricity bill and tell me what the total amount is?" It can go ahead and also. So play trivia games with you. You can ask it to, if you really don't, want to have a chat about something specific, you could even, play games with Envision, with Ally. Ally is available on iOS, Android. It's available on the desktop as a web app. So you can just, use Ally in any browser as well. Ally is also available on smart glasses as well. And an interesting thing is Ally is also available in museums now. So I'll talk about it a little bit later on as well. But yeah, Ally is pretty much everywhere, and it's what Envision is focusing on mostly.
Now, when it comes to Ally, I have used it myself, and there's many great features about it. There's one particular unique feature which I've not seen in many, I've used many of these sorts of AI assistants from Google Geminis to ChatGPTs to Meta AIs. But what I like about Ally is its personality feature. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So Ally, apart from being a completely accessible conversational AI, it's also very personal. So Ally lets you, give it a personality. So you can create as many allies as you want. My ally, for example, is a 1930s foul-mouthed, always drunk comedian from New York. That's just, me, and everything that I ask it is spoken out with that personality. Some people have Spock from Star Trek. Some people have, Alfred from Batman. You can go ahead and give Ally, any personality that you want. You can write a complete backstory to it, and Ally just sticks to the personality that you always give. And you can carry these allies with you everywhere. So you can, have and the ally on your phone, and you can have the same ally on your desktop, and you can have your same ally on your glasses. So it basically just, comes with you wherever you go.
I really like this feature because I like my assistant to have a bit of a personality rather than kind of the usual formal approach. Now, Ally has evolved over the last year quite significantly. Can you tell us a little bit about how it's kind of changed since, I've tested one of the versions last year, but since then it has very much changed.
Last year, we just had Ally as a simple conversational bot. You could just like open up Ally and you could just talk to it, ask it questions, and get you to describe things. Ally today does over half a dozen things, right? It's able to look up your calendar. It's able to look up the weather. It's able to search the internet for you on any topic that you might want to do. Like I was talking about it, right? I went to a new city recently and I said, "Hey, Ally, can you just tell me the three best coffee shops closest to me?" Right? And Ally just looked up that information for me. It knows, where I'm located, and then it just is able to pull up this information contextually, right? It's able to scan documents as well, another feature that people really love. So you could just, hold Ally over a piece of document and say, "Can you scan this or can you read this for me?" And Ally just simply, picks that up and does it really quickly. I think what's also changed a lot is the speed at which Ally does things. If you've, played around with the very latest versions of Ally, we've kept, kept it up to date with all the latest happenings in the world of AI, which is, basically it makes every week feel like a year at this point with all the advances that are coming out. And we keep updating the AI model, so it's a lot smarter, but it's also a lot faster as well. And about a year ago, Ally was primarily available on iOS and Android, but today it's available across all four platforms that we work on. So it's also available on the desktop. So anyone who wants to use Ally on the desktop can just go to web.ally.me on their browsers and they can use Ally and it would just work out of the box. So it's available on a lot more platforms. And yeah, I think we're adding about one new feature every week at this point. So in the next 4 weeks, Ally might look completely different from what it is today.
I want to ask you this question. We've talked about obviously the glasses, and the Ally works on glasses as well, which, is fantastic because it gives you that hands-free wearable experience, which, as you know, is very popular at the moment.
I think it's definitely Ally is built for the glasses. You know, Ally is great on the phone. It's great on the web. It has its uses. But what I really love about Ally is just how amazing it is on a pair of glasses, because it is actually the culmination of my childhood science fiction dream. You know, my childhood comic dreams are kind of coming true when I actually use a pair of, Envision glasses with Ally, right? I just put on the glasses and I can just start talking to it. So I think that will be where Ally will have its biggest impact. So if you're, on the glasses, if you actually are someone who has a pair of Envision glasses, Ally is available to you, for you to use. And you'll notice that what I'm saying is not very far from, the truth. Because if you can get rid of all the menus and buttons and all these other things that you have to learn, if you can get rid of all of that clutter and you just put on a pair of glasses, hit a button, and then just start having a conversation, and through that conversation, be able to get things done. It just feels more natural. It feels much faster, and it just makes everything you're doing a lot easier as well, right? So it's a very hands-free experience. So it's a full-blown AI assistant on a pair of glasses that you can talk to, and that's what I think people really love about Ally on the glasses.
Yes, that hands-free experience to me is fantastic, especially when I'm walking or traveling. And when I'm walking, I don't really want to be walking holding my phone. When I'm traveling, I don't really want to try and reach my pocket and take my phone out, unlock it, and do all that to do it. But I want to talk about the smart glasses industry in general before we move on to some future plans and see if you can tell us any more. But I think, the kind of mainstream smart glasses industry is currently booming. I'm sure you are aware of, various solutions, including, the Meta glasses. And I think my question to you is, it's quite a difficult market, but how do the Envision glasses stand out as kind of, the main purpose-built wearable for the blind and low vision community?
With the Envision glasses, the big difference between this and other smart glasses out there is that this pair of glasses is completely standalone, and that makes it a big, it makes a big difference. Because if you can just carry a pair of glasses with you and not have to keep your phone around to operate it, if you don't have to connect it to your phone with a wire, if you don't have to always depend on your phone for the glasses to do its thing, that really opens up a level of independence. So a lot of people, what happens when they use the Envision glasses indoors is they only use the Envision glasses. They don't have to pull out their phone for anything. They don't have to connect the glasses to their phone again and again in order for the glasses to actually do its job, right? And that makes, again, a big difference when you're outside, because when you're outside, you don't have to, tether your glasses to your phone, and you can, you don't have to, do any of that. And you just have to connect the glasses to a hotspot on your device or any Wi-Fi, when you're outdoors, and it should just work. Another big differentiator is there are, of course, some glasses that are standalone, but the big problem with them is they're not powerful enough. So if you look at some of the industry leaders today, or mainstream smart glasses today, they don't have a long enough battery life for it to be useful all day. So when you're using some of the AI functions, or when you're using some of the media functions, and you're trying to record a video with these glasses, you get about 3 to 4 hours of battery life. Whereas with the Envision glasses, you get about, at least about 5 to 7 hours of battery life with them effortlessly. This is with you using all the AI functions on the glasses and so on. So just being able to not be tethered to a phone, just being able to be completely hands-free and standalone, plus having a really good battery life, I think those are the two key differentiators that this piece of hardware has over the other ones in the market today. And we've looked very, very, we've been trying to think of what could be the next generation of these glasses. We've been looking into a few of them, but to be honest, this hardware is still, in my opinion, it has a few more years of updates left in it. It feels like it has a few more years to go before it becomes completely obsolete. And even when there are better glasses that do come out, I think just the fact that it's super lightweight, it doesn't require you to constantly keep connecting to a phone, plus just having a 5 to 7 hour battery life on this is just Yeah, it's incredible.
Let's talk about some future plans. I mean, you've mentioned the hardware, and I've seen many blind and partially sighted people talk about the architecture that the Envision glasses use. And it's a few years old, certainly, but do you have plans to update the hardware that the glasses use to maybe, have different designs, maybe more kind of standalone glasses, kind of standard glasses design? Are there any hardware changes planned for the future for Envision glasses?
Not for the Envision glasses, no. I think the hardware that comes with it is pretty standard hardware. It comes from Google, and we can't really, add on stuff to it. We've done our, the customizations are more along the lines of us offering people additional frame options, and so on. That's the limit of customization we can do on those pair of glasses. We are looking at some other glasses at the moment. We're always experimenting with some glasses, but nothing that really is a successor to the Envision glasses itself. Nothing that is an actual V2 of the Envision glasses. So this is the hardware that we plan to work with in the near future. And I think, like I said, this hardware still has legs. It's got mileage in it.
Can you give us a bit of a sneak peek of maybe some f upcoming new features that people can enjoy with the Ally Assistant?
Yeah, so Ally has a lot of features coming. One of the features that it's been asked quite a bit is being able to import files into Ally. So you'll be able to share files with Ally no matter how big they are. We're going to start off with PDFs, but we're soon also branching into other file formats that you can just simply share with Ally. And Ally would be able to, read it and then, give you answer questions. Based on that, we're also working on a new, we're trying to bring Ally to more platforms. So you'll see soon Ally having its own phone number. So you can, text Ally, you can call Ally, on a regular phone, plus also use it on WhatsApp and Telegram as well. We're going to be bringing that in the near future. We definitely have a lot of plans to work with live video. That's also been something that people in the, in the community have been asking. So instead of you having to take discrete pictures with Ally, you can just simply go ahead and, shoot a live video. Or just have Ally answer questions as you're going through, an environment. You don't have to essentially have Ally keep taking pictures and answer questions based on that. And we're also bringing screen sharing to Ally as well, so you'll be able to share your screen on your desktop or share your screen on your phone. And we know. All apps aren't accessible. In fact, most apps and websites aren't accessible. And we've built a special accessibility screen, sharing assistant that can actually go through, a page with you or an app with you, and then help you navigate it more easily if you need to, right? So these are some of the things that we have in the pipeline. We have a few more things as well, but I'm going to keep that under wraps for now. When the time comes, we'll definitely talk about it.
I mean, you've shared some many exciting features, especially the live video feature, which I use with ChatGPT, but you don't get that unique personality, do you? So to be able to get that with Ally, I'll be very excited about that. And if people would like to keep up with news about new Ally features, where can they go to keep up with the latest features and developments?
The best bet is to just install Ally on your phones or use it on the web, right? So if you search for Ally Assistant or just Ally on the App Store or Play Store, you'll be able to go ahead and install Ally. Ally is a free app. So you'll be able to install Ally for free, use it for free. There is, of course, a limit on the number of minutes you can talk to Ally on the free plan. We also have an Ally Pro plan, which we've, basically pricing it at $10 or £10 per month. You could go ahead and then have unlimited conversations with Ally. Plus, you'll be able to also experience a lot of other premium features that we are putting into Ally over the next few weeks, right? So those are some of the things. That's where you can, if you just install Ally and use it, like I said, it's completely free and it'll always remain free. We will try to go ahead and, keep you informed about all the new features that come in through Ally itself.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Karthik. You've provided us with a lot of exciting information to look forward to, certainly. Thank you very much, Karthik Kannan, CTO and co-founder at Envision. Thank you very much for joining us here on RNIB Tech Talk.
Jackie, you mentioned on the show, I think it was a couple of months ago now, maybe a bit longer, that you've got your hands on a Mac Mini. And you're going to try and get to grips with that. How are you getting on? How are you finding it? How are you finding voiceover and stuff?
Yeah, I got my Mac Mini in February, and I'm actually beginning to get used to it. I know it's taken a while, but it is a completely different sort of operating system and a different way of doing things. But the first thing I did when I took it out of the box was obviously the command F5 function to turn on VoiceOver. And then obviously I had to jump through all the hoops that Hubert mentioned earlier with iOS that you have to do to log in and your two-factor authentication and all that sort of stuff. And then I went in and I it took me ages to faff around and try and find where the VoiceOver settings were so that I could change the voice and adjust the speed as well. I felt it was a bit too slow for me. And bit by bit, little by little, and it has been little by little, it's been very baby steps because there are some times when I just don't have time to spend messing around on it. It would normally be at the weekend or something that I would mess around with it. And I've paired a Bluetooth pair of headphones, and I have put my printer on the network through our little network that we have. So I've got my printer on it now as well, and I've downloaded lots and lots of information. I mean, there is a huge amount of information for the Mac out there compared to what it was when I first saw it, which would have been in 2011. My husband had one, and he had a Mac Mini at that time, and he kind of got to grips quite well with it. But then obviously he dropped what he'd learned and went, well, he never left Windows, but he just returned to Windows and never really looked back. I had a good play with it at the time, and I thought, I'm never going to get to grips with this because VoiceOver on the Mac is different to VoiceOver on an iPhone or an iPad. I'm sure you guys agree with this.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think, because my introduction to the Mac, and I don't use the Mac anymore, but I did use it for about probably a good 10 years. And my kind of intro to it was, and the same with my family members, well, VoiceOver on the iPhone's amazing. And, they're both Apple, so surely VoiceOver on the Mac will be similar. And in some ways it is, but in some ways it really isn't, I think. I mean, Hubert, you're a Mac user. I'm guessing you'll agree with that.
I'd say VoiceOver on the Mac is similarly amazing in terms of the fact that you've got an equal access to the device. But yes, there is quite a few differences. It's, the way it's used because you are constantly using a keyboard, and there are some specific kind of elements which I think differ a lot. One of my favorite ones, although that does cause a debate with people, is interacting. So this is where a lot of elements are actually not displayed. So in Windows, there's often that kind of thing of you have to tab through every single element to get to where you want in certain windows. On the Mac, a lot of that is hidden away. And in order to access it, you need to interact with various content areas or tables or things like that or groups. So you don't see all of that with the screen reader unless you actually want to, which to me, once you get used to that concept, it is fantastic because it cleans everything up so nicely. It gives you less to go through unless you actually want to go through these things, in which case you can interact if you so choose. That's probably one of my big differences when it comes to voiceover on the Mac, but I think I really like it.
Natalie, have you had much experience with Mac OS and voiceover on that?
Not loads, mainly because of the frustration element. And as Jackie's already mentioned, you kind of need to give yourself a bit of time to probably go through and have a play. And because I leave it so long between each time that I play, I usually have to wait for an update as well. But I have to say, I don't find it all that intuitive. And for me, what I think the fundamental differences are, which makes it harder to get past that first step, is one, nothing to do with voiceover whatsoever, but it's actually just the Mac operating system. So I think I'm right in saying this for pretty much all screen reader users, the first thing we will do when our laptop loads is hit the start key, the Windows key, to bring up the start menu. And Mac just doesn't have that. So suddenly you find yourself trying to take that first step, but there's nothing to step onto and kind of flailing around. And then the second thing that I really struggle with is I don't find their keyboard shortcuts intuitive. And I know you can remap the voiceover keys just like you can in JAWS to which one you prefer. But I think you have to press Control Option Space to select. Whereas in every other platform I've ever come across, JAWS or otherwise, it's the Enter key. But the Enter key seems to expand things. And my wee brain just can't cope with that.
Yeah, I'm kind of getting into the way now that the way that Hubert mentioned the way that you have to interact with everything. I'm kind of getting into that philosophy now when I'm on the Mac. I've got to think what I need to do. And that is the thing, is it's getting it into muscle memory. It's making yourself remember so that it becomes just normality like it would on Windows. You know, I don't think about where I need to go to look for something in Windows now. Most of it, I know where it is. And I think that's because I use it every day. I was kind of sort of born into it, if you like, a sort of a when it began, really, when Windows, you know, began and 95 came out and stuff. So, I don't know. I like the Mac and I like the idea, but I couldn't see myself using it on a daily basis. I could be wrong. Maybe play this recording back next year and maybe I'll be in a different place. But I do have to do it in short bursts because it just fries my brain, to be honest.
You did mention using Mac and Windows. I often find myself, it's quite funny, after I've used one system and switched to another, I try to often do the shortcuts that of the previous system. So often when I've used a
Yeah, me
Mac,
too.
I then go back to a Windows machine and start pressing Mac keys.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, why is it not working? And then happens the reverse. I've used a Windows machine and I go to a Mac. It's like, the start menu's not loading. Oh, yes, it's because it doesn't have one.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do that.
Yeah. It's all good fun.
It is. I mean, it's always interesting, isn't it? I mean, going back to the interaction thing, like, I agree with you, Hubert. Like, I miss that on Windows. I miss the interaction, but it all depends on the apps and how well they've implemented that. And what kind of pushed me away is that lately, Apple's own apps don't seem to have implemented very well. I mean, the App Store is a pain in the backside to navigate around on there. And I find things like messages not the best.
Messages I like, but the App Store I frequently struggle with. The
Yeah.
one thing on the Mac that I use very rarely if I really need to. I'm not the biggest fan of the App Store app. It's a bit clunky. It's not very intuitive. The Messages app I can work with quite well because I think it's
No,
still
I'm
quite
not
nice.
either.
But yeah, the App Store, I'm like, it's a bit of a faff. It jumps around sometimes. It doesn't give you what you want. So I kind of use it if I must, but because I've got most of the apps I want, I try to avoid it.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting and it's, you know, it's all good fun. I think the bits that are similar on iOS as well, just quickly, if you have got a Mac laptop or if you've got a trackpad, you can do similar gestures, you know, like kind of flick left and right and double tap, and you can do like three fingers to scroll up and down, which to me isn't as intuitive when you've not got that touch screen to reference, but it does work, and that can be a good way of getting started as well. Like, if you've got a Mac with a trackpad, sometimes that can kind of get you going. I mean, you do need to know a lot more than that. But that did help me get to grips with some of the basics.
You can also use the numpad, I believe. If you have a Mac with a numpad on it, I think you can I think you can map it so that you can use a voiceover with the numpad to do a lot of the actions as well. I've never tried that yet. I haven't got that far. As I say, I'm enjoying it. I like a challenge, so I will stick at it, but it's going to be for me a very slow process.
Fair enough. Yeah, well, keep us updated how you're getting on, and let us know as well. Are you using Mac OS? Are you using Windows? Have you tried either one? How have you got on? Get in touch, techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
Time now on RNIB Tech Talk here on RNIB Connect Radio to talk about Land of Livia, a mobile game developed by Split Atom Labs, an independent studio founded by former Meta employees. The game has been purpose-built to be fully accessible and playable by blind and low vision players. It has been also named as an Apple 2025 Design Award finalist. So a pretty big achievement there. And joining us to talk about this is the founder of Split Atom Labs, Aaron Vernon. Aaron, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here. I feel like that was such a good introduction. You've kind of said my whole thing now. It's awesome.
So this game has very much set a benchmark, you can say, for accessible and inclusive game design. But for those that haven't heard of Land of Livia, what is the game exactly? And what makes it different in terms of gameplay and world building?
From a broad level, what sets it apart is it's a relaxing adventure that's designed to be played throughout your day. So whether you live a busy life, whether you've got lots of different things on, whether you've got different stresses in your life, it's a moment to relax throughout your day and enjoy yourself. But then more deeper than that is leaning into that idea of enabling everyone to escape. We've built it from the ground up to be as inclusive and as accessible as possible. And so, as you said, like we're trying to set that new benchmark of what it means for a game to be inclusive. That means building alongside our audience from day one, incorporating their feedback, and really trying to push the boundaries of how can this be played by as many people as possible. And as far as like the actual like gameplay, it's you follow a quest from being a lonely farmhand with an overbearing boss, trying to figure out why the rain has stopped in your region, which sets you off on an adventure around the Land of Livia to uncover a deeper conspiracy. And so it's kind of played in these short bursts throughout the day over several months.
Now, I quite like that aspect because, you know, often you need a lot of time to play a lot of these games. Whereas with this particular game, you can kind of check in on it throughout the day. You don't have to constantly be active, which is quite nice for someone who is busy but wants to still experience gaming. One question I do have for you in terms of accessibility, what inspired you to have accessibility built in from the ground up pretty much? What inspired you when you were, you know, thinking of the game to say, yeah, this is what we definitely want?
I started actually building the game back in 2014. And at the time, I was a big World of Warcraft player, and I wanted to build a mobile game that I wanted to play myself but didn't see around, which could basically boil down that rewarding gameplay, some light social elements into this game that kind of wouldn't take over your life and also wouldn't have any of the predatory monetization that was present, very present in games then, and it still isn't present in games today. And so I built that, and then in 2016 launched it. But in 2018, something really interesting happened. I started to get players from the Apple Viz community play the game and give me their feedback about how it could be made more accessible for players who are blind. And so I started to learn more about these players and their specific needs within the game and started to improve the experience. And then once I started that, it created this really strong positive feedback loop where the more I leaned into it, the more I fixed and improved the experience, the more positive the feedback was that I was getting. And this was, it became quite, you know, heartwarming feedback that I would get on almost a weekly or a monthly basis, telling me how this game has allowed them to play in a way that they haven't been able to for a long time or maybe at all. And so it was at that point in 2018, I knew that I wanted to start a company around the idea of accessible games. And so then it really just became a time of a moment of waiting for the right time to do that. And that time came in 2023 when I decided to start Split Atom Labs. A little kind of side anecdote on that is that I later realized that I was diagnosed as neurodivergent myself. And then that kind of influenced a lot of the original game design I had. And so when we look at cognitive impairment and cognitive accessibility, A lot of the base game design is actually really a positive experience for people that are having some of those challenges as well. And that kind of was born out of my own personal experience. And then now, obviously, it's been applied to a much broader, accessible, and inclusive audience.
For those that may not be familiar with how accessible the game is, what accessibility features does Land of Livia support?
We started off, it started off with having very robust voiceover support. So voiceover is the screen reader technology on iOS, which I'm sure many of your listeners are familiar with. And what makes us different is that we design for voiceover from first principles. So we treat it efficiency with voiceover just the same as we would treat efficiency for any player using taps or any other kind of input mechanism. And that means we can really refine the gameplay loops to be as efficient and as rewarding as possible. And we've done that over many, many years, as I said before, with our kind of beta testers. Love the game and give us lots of great feedback when we make changes, whether it's good or bad, they tell us and we kind of iterate on it. From there, we expanded into supporting dynamic type, which is adjustable font size supported on iOS. And so we support right up to the top accessibility font size, which is very large. And I have not seen any game on mobile kind of support adjustable font and dynamic layout as much as we've been able to do with Land of Livia. And then now we're also, in the last 6 months, really started to lean into that kind of cognitive accessibility, more into the relaxing angle. And we've built in features like ability to auto-equip your best items, sell items that may be not as useful to you. And even if you ask Siri, hey, in Land of Livia, what should I do next? It'll actually pop up a sheet that'll tell you exactly the thing that you need to do next. So you don't need to remember where you're up to. You don't need to kind of get your bearings. It just tells you, right, this is what you need to do now. And the more we've been introducing these features, the more it's enabled other people to come in and enjoy this game, many of whom have, this is actually their first experience gaming. And so we're quite proud to, be that first game that they get to play.
Did you work at any stage with blind and low vision users during the development process?
Yeah, absolutely. So right back in 2018, when we started to get that feedback from the Apple Viz community, I invited them into the beta, and we would talk backward and forward in our in the campfire in the game. Actually, was how I would get most of the feedback. So the campfire is like a community aspect of the game that allows people to talk with each other. But since founding the company, we've stepped it up again, and so we have a Discord with hundreds of members. And we have a tight group of people with varying different disabilities, and also some people without disabilities that form our beta testing group that we call the Cerulean Council. And that's really the brains trust that we go to when we're trying to figure out, like, hey, we're struggling with this design problem. What are your recommendations? Here is what we're thinking. What do you think? And then also, as part of that, we'll from time to time do user interviews as well to dig deeper into. How is this game working for you? What are the opportunities that you see? How do you think about our game as opposed to other games that you play? And that can unlock new insights as well. And so, when I'm going around talking about this game to people, many of whom are not in the accessibility field, that's really my number one tip that I start with is you've got to include the audience from day one, get that feedback, work with them closely. That's how you're going to build the best product in the long run.
Accessibility can often be challenging in certain aspects. Have you found any particular challenges during the development process in terms of accessibility that you had to overcome?
The platform can sometimes be tricky, right? Like it's just another technology stack that you need to understand and master on the device. And there can be quirks along with any frameworks, which means you need to find workarounds. But I think that when you're finding workarounds in this situation, for me anyway, it can be difficult to know how much of it is like baseline expectation of the platform and just the limitations of it versus like we're using it the wrong way or we could be using it in a better way. So that's definitely one challenge. I think the other one is you can't please everyone all of the time. And so we try to pick the solutions that suit the most people that we can. And sometimes that will mean that some people don't like the changes. As an example, we have a law researching mini game, and many people complained that it was too difficult over many years. We made it easier, but there was a and we had adjustable difficulty, right, which is a great accessibility feature to have. But we did have a small number of people that wanted the old game back, and that was just not something that we were prepared to do in the game. We're very much of the thinking that. Well, not everything is going to be for everybody. there needs to be ways to get the same enjoyment, the same fun, maybe the same outcomes in different ways. And so even with the law researching as an example, we have a law researching minigame. We have other minigames that rely on different skills and different abilities to achieve the same outcome. And we think that's kind of a really clean solution because it gives varied gameplay and allows more people to play.
What does it mean to you and, well, the rest of Split Atom Labs to have the game recognized not only for its, you know, accessibility, but also its excellent design, you know, by being listed as a finalist for the Apple Design Award in 2025?
It's pretty incredible. I think for the company, it's definitely the most pivotal moment that we've had so far, and it's definitely unlocking new opportunities for us, new ideas and aspirations for growth, which is very exciting. On a personal level, this design award has been a very coveted thing for me personally for a very long time. I first attended WWDC, the Worldwide Developers Conference from Apple, in 2011. And it was my first time traveling overseas, over to America. And I was in the keynote that would be Steve Jobs' last keynote that he gave, which was a very special moment. And I went kind of two times after that to WWDC. And each time I saw the Apple Design Award winners and finalists and kind of stood in awe of like what they were able to achieve and how they were able to push the boundaries of design on the platform. It was not ever something that I thought I would be able to achieve myself. And it's not something that I ever really kind of explicitly aimed for. But when we were able to achieve it, it was a very special moment. And obviously being over there and attending it and getting the accolades and the recognition was really great. I think also there's an aspect of it that I'm really proud that we've been able to do this for an accessible game, for an inclusive game, where that is the real mission behind our company. It's really the first step of proving this out, proving our thesis that we can make a mainstream game that can be one of the most accessible games at the same time. It's certainly not easy. It's a challenge, but we're making progress on that every day.
Have you had any memorable feedback from blind and low vision users that particularly stood out to you?
There was one recently, actually, from a guy, Richard, from the UK. And he said, you know, Land of Lithia is the first game I've played in 6 years, and the very first I've played as a totally blind person. 6 years ago, I was immersed in the world of Xbox and PlayStation, playing hardcore first-person shooters and living for that next challenge. When I lost my sight, I thought that chapter of my life was closed for good. But now with Land of Lithia, I've found something that not only helps me pass the time, but also reconnects me with the joy of gaming. Land of Lithia hasn't just raised the bar, it has set the standard for accessibility and narrative in gaming. He's now part of our beta testing community and giving great feedback, almost on a daily basis, actually. But it is that kind of feedback that really, really puts the wind in our sail as far as like making progress on our mission.
What have you found the most rewarding in this whole process?
It's the sense of community that we've been able to build around the campfires in the game. So when I initially built the campfires, the idea was to keep a small, random group of people matched together when they launch the game, with the idea that small groups generally have good conversation that is not doesn't become as toxic as broader forums. And as a socially awkward person myself, I like the fact that I could just be paired with people in a small group and just start to talk and communicate. And I think that really struck a chord with the players who are blind or have low vision that play our game, because they're put into these campfires. There's a mixture of people who are sighted, people with vision impairment, and they're able to communicate and share their experiences, not only with the game, but with their life in general. And so we're starting to see friendships form within these campfire communities. And I think that's really special. Like, that goes beyond enabling play. That's enabling connection and community amongst people that otherwise may not have an ability to do that.
Now, I want to talk to you about the industry in general. Do you think the gaming accessibility is starting to take accessibility within gaming more seriously?
I think so, yes. I've definitely seen a trend, a positive trend. And I think quite a few AAA games have been made much more accessible. Games like Last of Us Part 2, Forza Horizon Motorsport, and God of War Ragnarok. And these were made in conjunction with many great accessibility consultants, many of whom have disabilities themselves, so have that lived experience and are brought into the game studios to make accessible games. And then at the same time, or at least more recently, we have almost every single app store or storefront for games is introducing some form of accessibility labeling. Apple is launching accessibility nutrition labels later this year. Steam just launched accessibility labels, and there's a consortium of companies like Nintendo and Microsoft that are doing it for consoles. So I think this is a really good start. I think what it's going to take, though, is more companies to incorporate accessible and inclusive design from the beginning. I think that it is more difficult and more expensive to add later on. And if you do it from the beginning, I think many studios would be surprised how much mileage they could get. It's when you do it from the beginning, obviously, it can be easier to expand to more people rather than tacking it on at the end. And I think the challenge at the moment with the industry is that the games industry is not doing that great. There's been lots of layoffs, there's been lots of downsizing. And so it's hard to prioritize new bets, new investments that are less proven. From my perspective, though, accessibility is only going to become more prevalent from the perspective of increasing legislation that is coming in around accessibility. It's only a matter of time until that will completely cover gaming from my perspective. And then the other thing is that people often think about gamers as young people and kind of that old stereotype of gamers, but that's actually not the case. Gamers are all different ages. And as the population gets older, accessibility and inclusive design is going to become more important to make sure that these game studios keep the audience that they have today, so they can keep playing them for the next 20, 30 years.
What advice would you have to other game developers who are looking to make their games more inclusive and accessible?
I think it varies on platform, but I would definitely do some research just on like what games are accessible and look into the features that they have, a bit of an audit of like how did they solve this. And then go talk to some real gamers. I think this is where you do have to be a little bit sensitive. I know that like many of the forums, like on Reddit or in Discord, they do get a little bit tired of just like endless surveys and being asked to provide their opinion for free. So definitely as a studio or a developer, take it on yourself to be the one that has to go and learn and like do the digging, do the hard yards to learn. But then, I would put out a version of like, here's the best that you could do based on what you've learned. Share it with the audiences and then get their feedback. Like take that first step, and then see, how can you improve from there? And I think, as with most things, like be curious and have a growth mindset. Even more so in this field, I would say.
Back to Land of Livia, what's next for the game, Aaron? Could you give us a sneak peek? Any new features, any sequels, any other
Ooh.
games?
Oh, I asked like a true fan. I like it. What we're really excited about is leaning into that campfire, that community aspect that we talked about previously. We'd love a way for people to feel like the world was alive with more of these people from the campfire. And as much as we love the idle and relaxed gameplay, there is an opportunity for a little bit more of an engaging core gameplay loop for the sessions while you're playing them. So, right now, session time is around 2 to 3 minutes. Like we'd like to see like, hey, maybe someone could play for 5 to 10 minutes. And what that looks like is starting to experiment with more gameplay mechanics inside the game that are a little bit more interactive. And I think this is what we're really excited about, is this is where we really start to stretch our accessibility and inclusivity approach to, how interactive can we make it? How broadly accessible can it be? How can we also do this in a way that doesn't lose the DNA of Land of Lyria, but gives people more to play and more to enjoy?
And lastly, for people that would love to play Land of Livia and give it a go, where can they get it? Where is it available?
It is available on the Apple App Store across iPhone, iPad, and Mac. And it's a free download you get the first chapter of the game, the prelude to play. that takes, so usually takes people about a week or two to get through. And at that point, you can purchase the full game.
Absolutely fantastic to hear. Such a great development in gaming accessibility. And well, we shall keep playing. We will also have a little demo of this game later on RNIB Tech Talk in future episodes. But for now, Aaron Vernon, founder of Split Atom Labs, thank you very much for joining us here to talk about Land of Livia on RNIB Connect Radio.
That's all we've got time for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. If you've got any comments or questions or any tips that you want to share with us, please get in touch. We'd love to hear from you. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. You can send a written email or attach a voice note as well, and we will get your voice on air if you want us to. We'll be back with you same time, same place next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Hubert Pavalkovich, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Until next time.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.